The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 491, recorded on January 22nd, 2018.
First edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 324th episode of Video Gaming Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Powell.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Right. So, this is kind of a slow month because not much is happening, which is generally for everything else. Although I am curious, Scott, did you happen to watch The Last Jedi? I imagine you should have.
Yes, it did.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. You just make me feel like Leia Poppins.
I know you didn't like it, but I was fine with it. We were discussing it before, and we were saying how we didn't really like the whole, they've been reduced to being rebels again, and they did that.
The way they try to turn it into a Marvel movie with a humor. Every time something is going to be serious, oh, we got to tell a joke. And the jokes fall flat. And that's its biggest problem to me. I don't care that Snoke, spoilers everyone, and I don't care, you're going to hear spoilers now. I don't care Snoke was a nobody and Rey's parents were nobodies. And all that stuff. I really don't care about that, you know, because here's a little secret. J.J. Abrams doesn't know how to write. He just makes up crap and decides, I'm going to figure out what it means later.
Well, this wasn't J.J. Abrams.
Wasn't J.J. Abrams. This was Rian Johnson, the guy who did Looper.
Right.
But J.J. Abrams in the previous film, he made Snoke but had no backstory from him. He hinted at this. He said, where'd you get this lightsaber from? That's a tail from this. That's exactly everything he did in Lost. He makes up stuff as he goes along, and he has no clue of what it's going to be because he loves the magic box. But what he doesn't understand is the person who put stuff in the magic box knows what's in the magic box. You know? And often the stuff that's in the magic box is crap. So, yeah.
I think they're trying to redo the hero's journey, and a lot of times the hero has to come and be at impossible odds, and it's hard to do if you have, like, a whole entire galactic armada or whatever.
But you know, it's going to be in the ninth film, right? It's going to be, once again, giant spherical super weapon that the rebels have to blow up. That's the only story they have. I would like it. You know what? I already said this last week. They should just have two television series, one light, one dark, and build the universe before you start telling stories in it in a movie form, because Star Wars is so limited. It's TIE fighters, lightsabers, Jedis, a dark helmeted guy.
Yeah, it's not like we have a whole ton of books written about an extended universe that we could dive into.
Someone said something which I thought was perfect about it. Making a cinematic universe out of Star Wars is like making a cinematic universe out of the Back to the Future trilogy. You know, they were able to do it sort of like with Star Trek, because Star Trek was a TV series, so they had dozens and dozens of episodes. And I'll tell you something, you know, they don't pay attention much to the books, because Star Trek has a lot of books too. You know, that's just beta material. That's, you know. And you also have stuff that's straight up, you know, like Splinter of the Mind's Eye is where Luke and Leia are becoming close romantically, and there is no Han Solo. And that was going to be the story if Harrison Ford decided he wasn't going to do Star Wars anymore. Anyways, it's just that they just need to reboot the entire thing. Although, you know, I don't know how good they are at rebooting, because we've seen Spider-Man rebooted 3 times now.
They're not going to reboot it. They're going to do a Han Solo movie.
Who cares? I don't want to know about Obi-Wan's Oh yeah, Rogue One sucked.
Jonah, doesn't mean nobody cares.
But here's the thing, Han Solo, well, in particular, the Han Solo film is going to be a disaster because the main actor couldn't act and they had to hire an acting coach for him. They fired the directors and put on Ron Howard and all that stuff, and early reports are it's a disaster. So the thing is that they're clinging too much to the first three movies, and they just should just do something new, you know? Do something that doesn't involve laser weapons.
They're gonna have laser weapons. It's future.
Why not?
It's the futuristic.
Why?
Because
why,
it's the future. They have lasers.
How about no weapons? How about no fighting whatsoever? And I'm hearing myself on your.
You saw what happened when they tried to do political one with the prequels and how people.
Oh, but that was George Lucas who was writing it. And you don't have to. I mean, let me put it this way. Where was the fighting in The Empire Strikes Back, except for one duel between Darth Vader and Luke?
On the Endor planet.
Oh yeah, yeah, a big battle scene, but that only set up the fact that they have to escape.
Yeah.
There was no. Luke was discovering what it was to be a Jedi. And yeah. They were running away from the Empire.
I mean, that's.
There was no.
That's
real...
why I was mentioning. The expanded universe is because you have all these stories here, dozens of stories of different characters, and I mean, you have space, you have this giant galaxy.
Then you have to figure out which is in canon, which is not. That's why Disney decided to dump all the books as non-canon, because it just gets too much. You know, no one's going to make a movie out of Wikipedia. They're just not. I mean, like I said, Star Wars is a big mess, and they have to get away from the formula. Now, that's not to say that the formula doesn't work, because James Bond has done the formula for 25 films. Not all of them are great, but enough of them are good enough, you know?
Yeah.
Indiana Jones had the same formula, too. You had the mini-adventure at the beginning, you have the main plot, you even have them fighting a big guy in each of the films and all that stuff, you know? They sell it straight from the plot, either, but...
I'm going to put this out there. I mean, The Last Jedi still has a 90% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's for critics.
Wait.
The critics loved it. Look at the audience reaction to that.
No, the critics hated it. The audience is what's loving it.
The critics loved it. Look at the reviews. It's like at 90. The fan thing is like at 55 on Rotten Tomatoes. What's interesting is that all the critics love Star Trek Discovery. And the fans hate it, and all the critics hated the Orville, but the fans liked it. But here's the thing, is I can't watch the Orville because they rip off every single Star Trek episode. You can point out each episode is like, oh, it's a fan film of this episode. You know? Oh, they have to change the baby's sex without asking it. Oh, that sounds an awful lot like the Neutral Species episode. You know? And then he has to have a dick joke in it.
He starts weaning off of that as the show goes along.
He keeps,
but it's supposed to be a mix of Next Gen and Twilight Zone.
It's his fan. It's his fan film. He's rich enough to have his own Star Trek fan series.
Well, I like the show, so
it's dull. Because I already know the what's it called? 5 minutes into each episode, I know what's going to happen. Anyways, what have you been playing, TJ?
I've been playing a little bit of Monster Hunter World. I jumped into the beta.
Right. I forgot that was
coming. They did the last beta this last weekend. I pulled the trigger on doing some, pre-ordering. I went ahead and pre-ordered Dragon Ball FighterZ and Monster Hunter World. I'm going to be busy for the next forever. I will see you guys later. Bye-bye for life.
Hey, look, he's gonna dive so deep into Dragon Ball FighterZ. I'm gonna say something though, you know, Injustice 2, they still haven't released the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles yet.
You know, I went back to Injustice 2 for a little bit. I fiddled around in a couple ranked matches. I gotta say, I really, really, really hate that ranked matches have to be played in sets of three now.
I don't play online against other people. I just do the single player stuff. And the universe ladders, you know, that I'm fine with that.
I mean,
if you're
going to
be competitive, then
that
yeah,
stuff,
go ahead with the arc systems thing.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that we're different kinds of players, Jonah. I'm the type that like trains up and goes right into the ranked matches. And
hey, I trained up on Cooking Dash, and I was number one in the world in one competition. So I just pick my multiplayer. Naturally, it's asynchronous multiplayer.
See, and the thing is that I don't mind losing a match. I do mind losing a match and then having to sit around for two more matches against a guy that I know is going to beat me again. I think that's painful. Can you
forfeit?
No, it makes you play all three matches. I mean, I could quit out, but then that just like looks bad anyways.
They should have an option in which you just say, I surrender.
I didn't see one.
Do you want a rematch or a best of three? I don't get it.
There was pick a new character and there was rematch, and that really kind of disappointed me. I like my ranked matches to just be like, let's just do ourselves a nice little best of three and be off on our separate ways.
Street Fighter V multiplayer, like, by the way, have you noticed that everybody's been re-reviewing Rainbow Six Siege, and now they're giving it really high reviews now?
That makes sense. I mean, I don't...
They've come back to it, and they're saying, oh, wait, it's good now.
I mean, I know that game is good. It's interesting that they would go back and re-review that game, but at the same time, I guess maybe it's a push by Ubisoft to get everyone to be like, you know, maybe this game that you... looked at a bad review for a year ago. You should see where it's at now.
I think it's more like word of mouth. I think, you see, here's the thing. I was listening to the Rebel FM podcast, and they finally gave in because friends started playing it and saying and telling them, you know what, it's actually pretty good now. And you hear that enough, you say, well, maybe I have to reevaluate. And that's one of the new things is that 10 years ago, you didn't need to re-review something because it would never change. But now you have online games, and I'm not talking about MMOs. I'm talking about, you know, multiplayer games. And, you know, you might have to reevaluate them every 2 years or so, because if they've lasted 2 years, then something's going on with it.
Nobody wants to review League of Legends again. That would go poorly.
Yeah, but it hasn't it hasn't changed dramatically, you know. And besides, which they don't need to because they're playing it. And if there was any change, they would say, well, then we'll have to. I just think that Rainbow Six Siege has changed enough. And a lot of the gripes that people had in the beginning, they got rid of, you know, the grinding and all that stuff, you know.
Yeah, but nonetheless, I'm getting ready for I'm getting ready to be number one player in the mid south United States of Dragon Ball FighterZ. That's what I'm getting ready for.
Do you? I'm curious to know who your favorite fighter is going to be in a week or so.
I was really thinking about I always like the girl characters when I play the games. I like playing as them. And,
yeah, but
Dragon Ball FighterZ
is about what characters that you really know how to dominate with.
See, and that's my favorite thing. I like taking the ladies and making them monsters.
Oh, okay. I usually
new Saiyan, female Saiyan in this Dragon Ball Z?
She's an android. You're talking about Android 21, the one with the red hair and the glasses, right?
Well, they said that this was the new Saiyan, like, that was the only female Saiyan they had ever shown, so I didn't know.
Oh. Is it 20 characters with the game and 20 more in DLC that's coming for Dragon Ball Z Fighter?
That's Blaze Blue cross tag battle.
Oh, okay.
They are going to be adding 8 more characters as DLC eventually to Dragon Ball FighterZ.
How many does it start with?
It starts with, I think, a good 16.
Okay.
I think you're talking about Caulifla, Scott. She's a Saiyan character that showed up in Dragon Ball Super, and she's basically Goku's female counterpart in a different universe.
Okay.
There's a lot of speculation that she'll be one of the DLC characters they eventually release, and I'm really crossing my fingers for that because she's badass.
That's cool. I usually like female characters in the fighting games because they're usually faster.
Uh-huh.
Like Chun-Li and Cammy for Street Fighter.
Well, and, you know, remember Dead or Alive, I think it was 3, you had the first female Spartan, and she was just a tank. Nicole.
Mm-hmm.
Nicole. So what have you been playing, Scott?
Well, I actually played some Monster Hunter as well.
Oh. See, everybody's playing Monster Hunter but me.
How far did you get?
I beat the rock lizard, and then we went after the T-Rex looking thing that has the wings or whatever. And that thing was so hard. But like, cause it was funny because we chased that thing all over the damn place, and we went up like this cliff, and suddenly this dragon shows up out of nowhere, picks up the T-Rex thing and just throws it to the ground for us. And it's fantastic. Like, that game is so much fun.
Immersion game, you know, gotta love it.
Yeah, the whole environment will react with you. If a big boss monster starts smacking one of the other little things and pisses them off, they'll join on your side in the hunt and start attacking the boss. And it's just awesome. Remember your tweet, like, this is not like Dark Souls, and I agree. It's nothing like Dark Souls because everything is out to kill you in Dark Souls.
Here, I saw this webcomic demanding that people stop saying, this game is the Dark Souls of this genre.
Yeah.
I found it, Jonah. I found the first This Is the Dark Souls of 2018. It was about Monster Hunter. Like, I had just finished playing the game, and I went to go see what people were saying about it. And so, sure enough, I found a – just think of it as Dark Souls, but with hunting. And I'm just like, come the fuck on, guys.
Well, I haven't played it, but I know enough that when you're hunting something, it's like playing Cabela's Big Game Hunter. You have to do all this stuff as preparatory before you can actually find the creature to hunt it.
Some are harder than others. The first one, like the great Jagras, is pretty easy to track down. Others take, like, you have to track their footprints, and then you have to find dead carcasses and all sorts of different little things.
And then fireflies. Yeah.
It gives you, like, it gives you basically a quest list and a set of monsters and tells you how hard they're going to be. So you can really sort of tailor the difficulty to what you want.
Okay. So as for me, I played a little bit of Okami and I returned it. And it's just very slow moving. And, you know, I can see why people love it. It's a beautiful game, but it's very simplistic as well. That's not to say I'm not going to Gamefly it back again at some point. As a matter of fact, if I wanted to buy it for $18, I could.
There's something to be said for being simple sometimes.
I get it, but it just, well, I wasn't in the right frame of mind for it. Fortunately, it's Gamefly, so I can just get it back if I do get in the, and obviously, I still have my save file on the system, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Either I'm getting Monster Hunter World next or L.A. Noir next. And only because what's funny is that, I wonder, what's it called? I've seen people playing L.A. Noir VR and it is frightening.
Oh my god.
Here's the thing. Fallout 4 VR is at times really, really awesome, like when you have the long vistas. But when you get into combat or anything like that, it is just piece of shit. It's not, you know, you have a weapon and you have your ammo counter right in front of it, and when you have to look down to look at your Pip-Boy, and it's just, and there are so, if you thought there were funny glitches in Fallout 4 by itself, you know, when the game just freaks out and things happen that are strange, it goes up to 11 with VR. And the thing is that sometimes your gun will be behind the wall because the game doesn't know that it's supposed to be in front of the wall. Or even worse, when you're lock picking, the lock is, for whatever reason, behind the door. So you can't see the lock when you're trying to pick it. That sort of thing. I've been playing, I'm wrapping up Bioshock Infinite, and yeah, I'm not feeling it, you know? And what some of my complaints from before is that Bioshock Infinite just has a lot of things for you to shoot. You know, when you played Bioshock 1 and 2, the splicers had a reason to be there. They had their own personalities. If you left them alone, they would start talking to themselves or other people. They felt like they were part of the world. In Bioshock Infinite, the people you attack, they have no personality. They're either racist cops or racist Vox. You know?
Oh, that's boring.
And also, there's no reason to have Vigors. But they have Vigors because, hey, we need plasmids. You know? In Bioshock 1 and 2, the entire reason everything fell apart were because of plasmids and people abusing plasmids.
Yeah.
The Vigors are just there. They have no reason to be there except, hey, it was in Bioshock. And the other thing is that when I played Bioshock 1 and 2 and now Infinite, I'm thinking, you know, this should have been set in the time of System Shock. And the only reason why they did it, set it in the 60s and then the 1910s, is because the art style. But it makes so much more sense if you're playing it as System Shock 3, 4, and 5. If they would just set it in the future.
So, yeah.
You know.
I do have, like, a particular irk about Infinite is Bioshock 1, you get the fight with Atlas, and it's not the best boss fight, but it is interesting enough.
Oh, are you talking about the end of Bioshock Infinite where you just have to wait for the bird to come and do everything for you?
Uh-huh. Bioshock 2, you eventually gain the help of the big sister that you've been looking after this whole time.
Yeah.
And you have that whole bit where you become a little sister for a while, which is super interesting.
Well, in Bioshock 1, you had that bit where you became a big daddy.
Bioshock Infinite doesn't really have that drastically different moment at the end. It's a lot of the same thing, and it's just sort of playing the same notes while you just work your way to the ending, which is sort of disappointing.
All Bioshock Infinite had was a mind screw, and when you actually analyze it, it doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy the Bioshock Infinite story. I just think that the gameplay wasn't as... Besides the ripcord thing.
By the way, what I do get, though, is since I bought the collection, I have all the DLC, so I'll finally be able to play all of the Bioshock Infinite DLC.
Oh, Burial at Sea is so good.
Yeah, because it basically fixes a lot of the stupidity in the main game. But it's still, you know, just target, shoot, target, shoot, target, shoot, target, shoot.
That, and you get to see Dr. Suchong get super murdered.
Well, you got to see the aftermath of number one. So yeah, I'm looking forward to Monster Hunter World because it's a game that I've never played because I don't own Sony things and I don't, you know, and it's not something that, oh, I gotta play it, you know. But since it's out there for Xbox One and PC, I can say, okay, I'll give it a shot. By the way, they released the system requirements for the PC version of Far Cry 5. And they have all the recommendations from regular to 60 frames per second in 4K. Which is why I'm glad I own an Xbox One X, because at least I'll be able to play it in 4K without having to have a monster rig. What shocked me is that I saw that Hello Neighbor had sub-50 Metacritic.
Wait, which one?
Hello Neighbor. Yeah.
It was buggy. It was quite buggy, and that was unfortunate, just because when you have an AI that can essentially do as it pleases, and the idea was to create an AI that will do as it pleases, it gets really difficult, like, because the AI learns. If it sees you try to do a certain thing, it will actively start defending against that thing and remember that thing.
Yeah.
And it just made for a lot of buggy moments that made the game damn near impossible once you messed up enough.
You need some artificial stupidity?
Yeah. It really did in this case. It was a great idea, but dang, if it just sort of... Unfortunately, it falls flat on its face at certain points, and that's a real shame.
Yeah. I've also been playing a little bit of Railway Empire. It hasn't been released yet. I have a preview copy. And I'm mixed feelings about it. I hope that, because the thing about Railroad Tycoon was that laying down track was easy in all of them, but I preferred the first one the most. Other than that, you know, I need my Railroad Tycoon fix, especially since it doesn't work on Windows 10.
Hmm.
So, anyways, We're going to move on to the first. Why am I thinking of Terry Crews in Crackdown 3 all of a sudden? I don't know why. It's just strange. I was thinking about that commercial. I'm pretty sure that you think about that commercial every hour on the hour, TJ.
Which one?
The Terry Crews Crackdown 3 commercial.
It's a good one.
Yeah. Anyways, go ahead, Scott. You can read the first news item.
Okay. NIS America admits it has no idea when Wise 8 will launch on PC. This is from Destructoid. It was big news last year when it was announced that NIS America had snatched away the Wise franchise from Exeed Games and would publish Wise 8 Lacrimosa of Dana in the West. Unfortunately, things haven't gone exactly as expected. While the PS4 and Vita versions released without issue, barring the player complaints about a less than ideal translation, it's the PC port that has given the publisher the most problems. It was delayed in September, then October, and again in November. Just over a week ago, we were told it would release at the end of the month. Now NIS is admitting it has no idea when this game is going to come out. The publisher made the announcement on the game's Steam news page, writing in part, low frame rate issues and memory leak problems were apparent from the earliest PC builds we received. To help combat these, we looked into drawing processes which lead to an overall improvement in performance. However, we are still encountering frame rate drops in specific circumstances. The systems regulating these frame rate issues are heavily reliant on the architecture of the original PS4 version and as such are non-existent in the PC architecture. The memory leak issues are somewhat less complicated and expected to be resolved this weekend. But in order to solve these issues, we have determined that we must modify the core level of data in the game. If you have pre-ordered the game on Steam and want your money back, refunds are available. PS4 and Vita owners of the game will get a relocalization patch on January 30th. That is unfortunate that it's being delayed again. I don't know how long, but they seem to determined to release a quality product and not a subpar one, so that's good at least.
Did you say you were playing East 8, Scott?
Not yet, no, I was 7.
Okay,
and 6.
Which version do you think you're going to get?
Because
you have access to a PS4 and a PC.
Yeah, that's true, so I could just play it on the PS4, and I'll get that sooner than on Steam. So, yeah, I may do PS4 for that game.
Yeah, well, wait until the 30th so that you don't have all your base belong to us.
Yeah, I don't buy games quickly. I wait a lot. So this will be one of those that is going to be later on, and probably by the time that I have the money to buy it, it'll probably be on Steam anyway, so I'll have to wait and see.
Well, I'm pretty sure it'll also be for sale less on Steam too, since PC games tend to be a little less expensive than console games. Although there are some occasional games that are you know, the full price $60. I think Far Cry 5 is probably going to be one of them.
Yeah. Far Cry 5
sometimes these games have little extras when you get it on Steam.
Oh yeah, well, that's the third item we're going to discuss, but before that, so I wonder when. Never mind. So, did you enjoy I-7?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
It's a good game. I just haven't finished it yet. I've also been playing Oceanhorn because I wanted to finish that game. So I'm just trying to finish up some of my backlog of games before going on to new stuff. Yes, I have. I played it on the PlayStation 1, and I think it was PlayStation 1. And yeah, that was a really fun game. It was so cool to.
Was it a Japanese Star Trek, like people say?
Not really. I don't know what it has to do with Star Trek. Because you're like on the planet all the time. I mean, space is kind of like an afterthought. Like, yeah, that's we flew here, but now we're on this planet for the rest of the game. So forget space.
Well, you know, you have Star Trek episodes that are like that, you know, in which they're flying and then they land on this planet and the entire entire episode takes place on that planet.
Sometimes, but there's a lot of times where they're in their spaceship or they're flying in space or doing space stuff. Your gun goes bad almost instantly. You have one battle and then your gun's out of charge and now you have to use a sword. And oh, everybody else is using swords and magic. It's more fantasy.
Oh, okay.
It's more fantasy than sci-fi. But I liked that you had choices and they actually mattered because you could miss a character, for instance, and you, because of your choice, you're getting this character instead of that character. And so your whole story will change because you have different companions. So I thought that was cool. It was it's a very good series.
So we're moving on to the next item. Take it away, TJ.
Alrighty. New Fortnite Battle Royale update available now from GameSpot. Following a relatively brief maintenance period, Epic Games has released the new 2.20 update for Fortnite on PC, PS4, and Xbox One. As detailed previously, it deals primarily with Battle Royale, adding a newly updated version of the map, pregame voice chat, and more. Updates to the map are the most significant component of the patch. New areas have been added, primarily to the western half of the map, which has been somewhat sparsely populated before now. This includes a new city section and underground mines. Epic says the patch also enables a richer map and improved performance. Load times on consoles have been greatly reduced, and there should be less hitching in general. Other new features include the addition of voice chat in the pregame lobby, an update to the kill feed to show the distance on sniper rifle kills, and a revamped version of the scoped AR's sight. Another key change, the removal of friendly fire, was implemented recently, although it may only be a temporary measure as Epic evaluates what impact it has on the game.
I would imagine that would have a huge impact on the game.
I mean,
especially if you have weapons with splash damage.
It impacts trolls.
Yeah.
But who cares about trolls?
What do you mean
creepers? This is cool. Either or. But this is cool. I'm happy to see that Fortnite Battle Royale has kept taking off. I follow it on the regular. I see people doing cool things with it. I watched a video recently of somebody who won an entire match without using weapons. They just snuck around the map and remained very sneaky and very careful. And then when it came down to them and one other person, they built a whole bunch of crap until they sort of tricked the other person into falling off and dying due to fall damage.
Wow.
It was impressive to say the least. And there's like a lot of different things that people are doing with this game. They're like, if they're really good, they're making their game within a game sort of thing. And I really enjoy seeing what people do with it.
You know, that sort of reminds me that Rust is finally leaving early access. And if anybody's interested in Rust, they might want to get it before it does, because it's $20 now. When it leaves early access, it'll be $35. Although I hear horror stories from Rust and how abusive people can be just to be dicks.
Yeah, and I mean, that's in a lot of those open world type survival games, unfortunately. Rust, I've heard, a notoriously bad scene. Same thing happened with certain DayZ, I think was. Yeah. Same thing happened with that one where, like, just a whole bunch of trolls were just invading servers and just making it not fun for a lot of people.
Yeah, but the difference is Rust encouraged it. Rust was the sort of thing in which they were encouraging that kind of crap. And then it was a part of the, it was part of the, part of the scenery. Although yeah. I loved Yahtzee's review of Rust, in which he says, a typical encounter would be this. Hello there. Do you have a gun? Yes, I do. Do you have a gun? Yes, I do. Okay, now we're friends.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
If any answer is a no, bang, you're dead. I'm going to take your stuff now.
Yeah. What's funny is that I remember a couple of years ago, the people of Rust were wanting a third, you know, a threat, you know, and they didn't want it to be zombies because that's what DayZ is, and zombies are basically just the standard boring, what's it called, combat that you have in a game. I suggested robots, you know. You know, that's a game I have on my Steam that I haven't played in a long while, and that is Sir, You Are Being Hunted. I haven't played that in a while. I should.
Which one was that?
Sir, You Are Being Hunted. That's the game in which you are being hunted by upper-class British robots. And it's an open-world game, and it's only a single-player game. Although, they might have added multiplayer since, or co-op, or whatever, but it would have sort of like, you, what's it called, these, hello, hello there, are you out there? You know, that sort of thing. So basically you're a fox in a fox hunt. Except you're a human. And you had to do crafting, and you had to sneak around while these little balloons would be searching for you, and, you know, these robots were hunting you down.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Final Fantasy XII: The Zodiac Age releases in just a few weeks on PC with new features. This comes to us from US Gamer. Last year, Final Fantasy XII: The Zodiac Age was released on PS4. The better textured world looks surprisingly great on current-gen hardware, and on February 1st, PC players will finally get a chance to dive into the JRPG, and they get a few bonuses with the experience, too. Square Enix announced that today the PC version of Final Fantasy XII will feature an upgraded bump of 60 frames per second, and it'll be compatible with 21x9 ultra-wide monitors. And if you're really feeling the visuals, you can connect three HD screens for a potential 48:9 experience. The game also comes to the personal computer platform with new features in tow, specifically a new function to basically cheat that allows player to max out their guild currency and license points. From the start of launching the PC version, a few other things will be available right from the jump. The game's three versions of the soundtrack, the original, as if it's playing from the PS2 sound chip, reorchestrated, and a crisper version of the original, are all accessible from the start. Also, players will be able to dive into New Game Plus or New Game Minus mode. New Game Plus allows players to dive directly into the postgame as if they've beaten the game already, while New Game Minus mode does the same thing, only players won't be able to gain any additional experience points the entire playthrough. Final Fantasy XII will launch, as we said, on February 1st. The game will be available for 20% off its first week on Steam. There's no word on how much it costs yet, but as the PS4 version was $50 at launch, the PC version will likely be around the same price. Now, my opinion of Final Fantasy has been poisoned by Final Fantasy XIII. That's the only game I've played, and there's a reason for that.
If 13 is the only one you've played, then you haven't played Final Fantasy. You really haven't.
See, but that's the damage of having a bad game be released. It'll poison that person.
Yeah. Imagine someone, you chose the absolute worst one.
Imagine if people were introduced to, say, Mass Effect by showing them Mass Effect Andromeda. They're not going to want to play 1 through 3.
I guess not, but it's, yeah. 12 I thought was decent. It was pretty easy to break it or to overpower your characters. And just because you have this chessboard in this game, and that's how you level up your characters, and they all can start in different areas. But it's very easy to just start collecting all the different tiles, and then you get your summons, and each person gets one summon, but you could still get like the whole chessboard unlocked for a character. So
that's I think they know that it's easy to cheat, and they say, screw it. You know what? Everybody can cheat. We don't care. You can get all the money you want. You can get all the license points you want.
It wasn't cheating. It was just you
it was
can
exploiting
grind.
It. Yeah, but they said, well, if players are going to exploit it, well, guess what? We'll let them exploit it even more.
Yeah.
You know, that's the selling point of Final Fantasy XII. People can exploit it, so we're going to let people exploit it. How was the story?
The story was great.
Yeah.
Final Fantasy XII was the last good Final Fantasy story up until Final Fantasy XV.
Well, Final Fantasy XIV was an MMO.
Yes.
So we're only talking about Final one Fantasy game that was in there. MMO.
There's two MMOs. There was Final Fantasy XIV and Final Fantasy XI were both MMOs.
I know, but the one after XII, the only one that wasn't an MMO, what's it called? He says that it's the best game since, you know, it was the last good story until 15. Well, 12 was the last good story before 15. That only leaves 13 and 14 is an MMO.
Well, there's Final Fantasy 13, Final Fantasy 13 2, Final Fantasy 13 3, and so,
I think it was Lightning Returns, Final Fantasy 13.
And of course, and you know, there's Final Fantasy 1 through 9 and 10.
Oh, we know that. Well, we have 10, 1 and 10. 10 part 1, 10 part 2. That's the one, by the way, I think that Paul likes a lot.
Oh dear.
Really, I just want another Suikoden game. I just want Suikoden 6. I'll probably never get it, but that's
Paul
what I'm
worships
dreaming
of for Final Fantasy 7. By the way, they released screenshots of the new Final Fantasy 7 remaster.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like Final Fantasy 15.
Well, of course it's going to look like that. What did you expect?
I know that. I'm just saying, you know, so they really revamped it, you know.
I really hope that it plays like Final Fantasy 15. I wouldn't mind that in the least if they decided to go that route with it.
Oh no, they just upped this cutscenes and the character models.
Nah, I would love for them to. I mean, Final Fantasy 7 was great at the time, but I don't want to fucking grind for hours upon hours upon hours upon hours. Just let me do the Final Fantasy 15 thing and cut people to pieces. That'd be nifty.
I'm pretty sure the battle system is different. They said that it was going to be different.
This is more of a talk about times than the way the times have changed than any sort of quality measure of Final Fantasy VII. You can't the gamers nowadays, them young gamer whippersnappers nowadays are not interested in what we had to do to get through Final Fantasy VII.
You know, I wonder how I'll feel if I play Final Fantasy VII already knowing that Aeris dies.
Oh. I don't know. It's the journey, not the destination. I
know.
Guess.
It's just like when that plot twist is already known, you know. It's like telling someone. Well, it's like someone playing KOTOR knowing that the player character is Revan. You know, it's like how is it?
Yeah.
And it's you know, I don't want to give away the plot twist to Jade Empire because that one is actually the only one that really shocked me. And I should have seen it coming because they laid hints the entire way. That's why when a plot twist, when you play a game again and you say, oh, okay, there's the hints. You know, whenever they hide a plot twist, but when you play it again, you say, oh, okay, now I get it.
Well, it's real simple. You just don't level that scandalous hoe because it should have been Tifa Cloud to begin with.
I agree with you.
Don't level Aeris because you know she's gonna die.
Also, she's not good enough. Her.
Don't use her.
She's not good enough for him.
she's too good for the synth.
I think I've played that game 3 times, and each time I've done the date differently. I think I had Aeris first on a date, and then I had Tifa, and then I had Barret. But they treat it like a fail state. And so I need to play that one more time just so I can get Yuffie, the Yuffie date scene, just to see what that's like.
The other thing is, I wonder as an adult, I don't have any memories of playing Final Fantasy VII as a 12-year-old. You know, even at the time I would have been, you know, in my late 20s. So I'm wondering if it's just something, you know, the first sad scene that a 12-year-old has seen in a video game.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how many people are going to cry about with the opening of King's Quest 10, 5? It was King's Quest 5, I think it was, which the king dies and, you know, she mourns his death, which for a lot of people is the first time they ever cried during a video game. Or even the Ballad of the Star... Ballad of the Star-Crossed Miner, which is the song you sing to Floyd as he dies, the robot.
All I know is that I can't wait to get to the part where Cloud cross-dresses to sneak into that weird old creepy crime boss's place.
You know,
I'm not even sure that's
going to
be in there.
Considering, you know, a lot of the stuff that you do as Japanese DLC for RPGs is just change your clothes, I wonder if they'll allow you to pick out which dress he wears. Did you want the frilly gingham Dorothy Gale from Wizard of Oz dress, or the red dress from?
You have to go with something that shines and something that's soft.
Yes, we're instructing on how guys should do drag. That's where this podcast has gone down to.
Well, that's what that particular guy liked. So,
is it in canon? Is he a cross-dresser, or is he just in disguise?
He's in disguise to find somebody.
Did you ever see the animated version of All-Star Superman?
I did not.
So Steve Lombard is in the office of the Daily Planet, and Jimmy Olsen comes in wearing a dress. And Steve says, "Out undercover on a case again, Jimmy?" And Jimmy says, "No, why?" You know, I was just wondering if it was like that for Cloud. So Cloud, you're wearing a dress. Are you going undercover? Not really. Why?
He was they pretty much strong-armed him into dressing up and saying, "Oh, yeah, it was Eris and Tifo." Like, yeah, you got to go in. It's got to be you to rescue her.
So you're saying they had him wear a dress up to troll him? Is that why he's wearing? Yeah. They trolled him.
Yes. They said
you have to go in as a dress anyway.
Yeah, you have to go in to you know, that's the only way to, it was Corneo or something, and it was the only way to get audience with him was to dress up like a girl, and it had to be you. So, and then they came up with like, okay, you have to get the crown, you have to get the dress, and I think perfume or something, and you have to do all these awkward things just to get into that and then fight him.
So, you know, we didn't have the news items, but they were sort of stuff we didn't discuss last week, which I guess we could discuss now. One of the big things that's being talked about is Quantic Dream being a toxic workplace. You know, for those who don't know who Quantic Dream are, that's David Cage's company, you know. And they denied it. But, you know, when you hear stories like this, you tend to believe the people who are complaining. Like Team Bondi, you know, the people who did L.A. Noire.
He didn't even really deny it as much as he was like, "I'm going to let my work speak for itself." And then he was like, "You want to talk homophobia? I work with homosexuals. You want to talk black people? I work with black people." It's like, oh my God, what is wrong with you?
I thought it was Rockstar Australia that did L.A. Noire.
Yeah, it's Team Bondi. Okay. Bondi's in Australia.
Okay.
Yeah, it was Team Bondi.
Yeah, I heard. There was bad work conditions with wars and that way. It's unfortunate to hear about that kind of thing, and that we can't have better work environments for people, especially in creative endeavors like video gaming.
Well, that and David Cage is so far up his own ass that he thinks that
because they found 600 pictures that were photoshopped. They were either homophobic, sexist, and some of them included Nazi symbols.
And then you got this guy over here being like, "I'll let my work speak for itself." It's like, that is not an excuse.
Yeah, I mean, you could have Bill. That would be like Bill Cosby saying, "Well, look how funny my TV show was."
Oh God,
it's the same exact defense. Or O.J. Simpson saying, "Well, look how many I ran for 2,000 yards in one season."
But that has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, whatever. You butchered a woman and her friend. You've proved that you can run fast. That's all you could prove. So we could
David Cage is the worst.
Yeah, we could also talk a little bit about Nintendo's Arts and Crafts project. And And here's the thing. I know that TJ was defending it up left and right, what's it called, on Twitter. But one of the funniest stories I read was that at the German ratings board, the janitorial staff nearly threw out the prototype because they thought it was trash.
That is funny.
So yeah, and my stance was that, you know, for $70, you know, I can buy a 128 color Crayola box for $11 and get a coloring book. And it would cost less than $70 to spur your kids' creativity.
I think it's an extremely imaginative idea. I think it's a little expensive, I agree.
I think you should get better material for that price if you're gonna, you know, they can get plastic, harder plastic, folding pieces for that price.
I guess, but you know, Wii Fit was just a half-assed bath scale that Nintendo convinced people to purchase more money for.
Yeah, I hated that thing.
Right, and if you remember, one of my stances on this matter was, I don't know, I used to buy model kits back in the day, and some of those things were
Yeah, but that was still molded plastic.
But they were cardboard.
Here's the thing. I can take a cardboard.
Yeah, but the thing is that they would still break.
So what?
It didn't matter, they were plastic.
I don't see kids who can extrude plastic shapes. I mean, everything that you see in the thing, I can just take a cardboard box, put little dash lines on, and use the scissors and get the same exact thing.
Some
people, that's too much effort.
But you're also a grown-ass man.
But here's the thing. I refuse to believe it's going to spur kids' creativity, because basically you're telling them what to do, you know? Which is more creative? Giving your kids, say, a box full of Legos, just various shapes, or giving them one of those Lego kits that allow you to, say, build a Millennium Falcon, and you have the instruction booklet there?
I don't know. This doesn't really strike me as any different from a model kit.
I guess, but still.
Hey,
you know, if it comes with DLC, you know, if it's sort of like Lego, Lego Dimensions, in which what you build actually translates into something worthwhile.
And that's the other thing, is that it's toys to life.
Yeah,
and yeah, exactly.
Have you ever paid $70 for a Mario figurine? You could get
$20. No, but a Skylander set costs about $80.
How many characters are you getting?
You're getting three characters and maybe a vehicle.
Okay, but that's a ripoff.
I know. But people bought the crap out of it.
But hey, Lego Dimensions, people bought the crap out of the three packs as well. You know, and those were $20.
But the setup for it, like even the setup for Lego Dimensions isn't cheap.
Well, no, because you have the well, that's just it. Here you're just getting cardboard, though. You're not getting the it's not called the portal, is it? I know in Skyline it's called the Portal of Power or something like that. I don't know what they call it in Lego.
See, and that's the thing, is that you're going to get a few sets to go with this one, and then I'm willing to bet you money that they'll be like putting out maybe $15 to $20 sets that you'll be able to add on to this whole thing.
I think this will be just as successful as the Wii Fit sensor.
I think it has every chance to be as popular as Skylanders was.
I think the Wii sensor made more sense. No pun intended. You know,
I do agree with you guys.
You know, I wish. You know, imagine if you had a horror game which read your heartbeat.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't.
I do agree with you guys. I think it's going to depend upon. I think the price is a little much, and I think it's going to depend upon durability.
I don't think people are going to care about it.
Yeah.
I don't see a kid saying, "Oh, I gotta have that. Mom, get me that." And I mean, even before mom sees the price tag on it,
that's a good point about the durability too. That's, you know, because people throw in their people don't know how to take care of their stuff.
I don't know. Like I said, Nintendo sometimes gets these ideas. And I'm going to tell you right away, I know what this stuff is. Here's the thing, though. Nintendo's side business are these things. So they're basically taking the stuff that no one wanted to buy, slapping a Nintendo logo on it, say, hey, look, it's Nintendo now, and thinking people will buy it. These things are already were already piled up in their warehouse.
Boxes?
Yeah. Nintendo has other businesses, you know. I don't know. You know what would be nice is if they really went full back in on card games. They don't produce the Pokemon card game, do they?
I didn't know it was a Pokemon card game.
I think Game Freak does that.
No, I'm not talking the game. I'm talking about the Pokemon playing cards.
Yeah, I think that it's still Game Freak.
Because you know that you know what Nintendo did since the 1880s, right?
Uh-huh.
They made card games.
It's done by Nintendo, Hasbro, and Wizards of the Coast.
Okay, well, they get help for it. Okay. Because I'm thinking, I wonder how much a deck of cards made by Nintendo from 1860 would be worth now. They started in 1858, I believe, off the top of my head.
Oh, here we go. It's been the Pokemon Company, which is Game Freak, from July 2003 to now.
It was originally published by Wizards of the Coast in New York, in the U.S.
Yeah, it was done by Wizards of the Coast through Hasbro for 1998 to 2003.
Do they have to have every single CCG? Do they have every collectible card game? Is that it? Don't tell me they do Yu-Gi-Oh! Too.
I bet you they do.
I'm pretty sure Topps has one of the collectible card games. Anyways.
Mm. Oh, no, it's Upper Deck.
Oh, see, but that's still a baseball card company, though. Makes sense. So anyways, we do have listener feedback. Go ahead, Scott. I mean, TJ.
Okay. This one comes to us from Ralph on episode 489. Hi, guys. Thanks for the episode. It was interesting and funny as always. To your question of the week, I played Portal the first time last year.
Wow. So that you know, playing the first Portal, is it still free on Steam?
I think so.
Yeah.
It's either that or you get it through the Orange Box.
No, I mean, well, it's still available. I don't even know if the Orange Box exists on Steam anymore. But yeah, I mean, Portal, I can always check. But yeah, that's a good one to start with. I mean, to play for the first time. And Portal first came out in 2005, I want to say?
Yeah.
So yeah, 12 years ago, and it still holds up. I mean, I play it on occasion. Because here's the thing, Portal, the first Portal, is a two-hour game.
It's 2007.
Yeah, you zip right through it, you know, and it's a good, you know, one evening, oh, you know, I feel like playing Portal tonight, just to go through the entire campaign.
Yeah, I played Portal for the first time, I think, in 2012.
Oh. Well, wait, here's a question for you then. Which did you play first, Portal 1 or Portal 2?
Portal 1.
The original Portal is $10 on Steam.
Yeah, I played the first Portal.
I played Portal 2 first.
Wow. So you didn't have to deal with that for years of people saying the cake is... the cake isn't real, or... Oh, damn, I even forgot the meme.
The cake is a lie.
The cake is a lie.
The cake's a lie.
Uh-huh. And in Portal 2, there's no sign of cake. There is no cake, and the companion cube appears at the very, very end. So Wheatley is your meme, and also Cave Johnson. That's the gift to the world that Portal 2 gave us, is Cave Johnson.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then finding out that, I guess, do you want to spoil it?
Whatever. GLaDOS is, well, it's not much of a spoiler. GLaDOS is the, well, here's the thing. GLaDOS had Carolyn's brain uploaded to her. It was a merger. But we don't know, and it's a lot of speculation, if Carolyn was Chell's mother. They never outright say it. They hint around at it. Even last song strongly hints about it, but it's never really said that, yes, she is her mother. It makes a lot of things make sense, you know. But they never actually say, so it's up to interpretation.
But yeah.
But yeah, Portal 1, I think, is a better game than Portal 2. And not because it's shorter, but because the puzzles are better. In Portal 2, there's too much hunting. Is this space you're able to put a portal on? Okay, so that means this is the answer.
See, and I disagree. I think that the co-op mode in Portal 2 is where it's at. As far as
anything
can
be good with co-op mode. Even Alien Colonial Marines is fun when you're playing with another person in co-op.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the quality of the puzzles in the co-op mode as well.
That's just it. See, here's the thing. That's not a story mode.
It's totally a puzzle.
That's what Portal 1 did. In Portal 2, it's almost a walking simulator. With a few puzzles tossed in.
What? I think you're crazy, man. I think the co-op puzzles in Portal 2 are awesome.
I'm not talking about the
co-op
puzzles. I'm talking about the main storyline of Portal 2.
Oh.
In the Portal 2, the co-op, that's like Portal 1, and it's puzzle, 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 puzzle. You know, and you're trying to figure out these tough puzzles. The story mode in Portal 2 is less complicated, and it's more walking around and seeing the sights, and occasionally doing puzzles. You're there for Cave Johnson and GLaDOS and Wheatley.
And Butley, Wheatley, whatever. Yeah.
And Stephen Fry. Stephen Fry voices Wheatley Ralph, just so you know. Anyways, moving on.
Of course, I completed it very fast, but this was a PC game I played about 10 years after its release.
Well, here's the thing about Portal, by the way, before you move on, is that A, it started as part of the Portal, part of the Orange Box, and it was almost a afterthought, you know? But I didn't think it was an... I knew that I wanted to play Portal when I first saw it, you know? But for a lot of people, it was like an afterthought. And then they said, oh, wait a minute, this is actually kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. And then people speed ran the crap out of it and figured out all the neat little tricks that you could do to get through it.
For, yeah. How fast can you do this puzzle? How many? Actually, there's one that was how many portals, the least number of portals for a puzzle.
Mm-hmm. For console games, it must have been the first 6 Mega Man games. I don't remember which ones I played as a kid, but of course not all of them. So I decided to play through the first 6 Mega Man games last year. It took me a while to get through. I played Mega Man 2, 3, and 4.
See,
and then
you are the masochist. I'm not going to play Mega Man.
I did this as a kid, though. I had nothing better to do, and this is my game.
Playing it now is being a masochist.
It's not so bad. I beat Mega Man 9 just before the new year was out. I'll probably move on to Mega Man 10 soon. I like those games. They're fun and challenging.
Well, you know, the new Mega Man is going to be... It looks a lot like Mighty No. 9 in terms of graphics, which is fine because, you know, while the 8-bit aesthetic that were in 10 and 11 are fine, it's a lot easier on the eyes when you have, you know, when you take advantage of your system a little bit more.
But I'm there with you, Rolf. I those are a lot of games to play through, and they were super expensive when we were kids. Like, I think Mega Man 3 was about $50, and then Mega Man 4 was more than that. This was back in the days before they put regulations on game prices, so they were just sort of charging whatever they felt like for games.
Yeah, buy that Nintendo game, Super Nintendo game for $90 in 1995 money.
So as a result, I never got around to Mega Man 5 or 6, and it took me a long time to get to those.
Emulators for dearie.
Yeah. Mega Man 6 is really fun, though. Mega Man 6 is probably my favorite out of the series. It has my favorite.
Number 9 the best?
Nah.
Ukulele is not your favorite Banjo-Kazooie game.
I mean, I'll say this. Azure Striker Gunvolt is the best Mega Man game that's not a Mega Man game.
You know what game I haven't played, but I think I might play at some point, and that's Strider.
Strider is good.
And they had that remake a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm. The crown jewel of the series is Strider 2, which is on the original PlayStation. If you like that one, if you can ever play it, is well worth the time.
Okay.
But yeah, moving on. I like to play all the old games I missed in my youth. But as you know, now as an adult, you got the money to play games, but you don't have the time anymore to play all of them. Hell yes, that's the truth.
Yep.
And then, what's going on with this next one? Is this you, Jonah?
He's addressing me, yeah.
Oh, Jonah. Archon is a...
Archon. The name of the game was Archon.
At all. Okay. I was born in 1980, so I was 4 years old when Archon was released. And I got my first C64 when I was 8. That would be Commodore 64. So thanks again, guys, and keep gaming.
Yeah, Archon, for those who don't know, and I mentioned it last episode, was basically battle chess in terms of the chess pieces fight each other, so it is possible, you know... It's extremely hard for, say, a troll to beat, say, a wizard, because a wizard will kick his ass before he even gets to him. And that's one game that I would love to see remade, just with better graphics. The gameplay was perfect. The mm-hmm. game I really want to see is Mail Order Monsters remade. That would kick ass. And for those who don't know, Mail Order Monsters is a game in which you got a basic monster type, and then... You mutated it, like adding claws or adding a laser weapon or doing all sorts of stuff. And there were all these types like amoeboid, humanoid, tyrannosaurus-oid, a walking plant.
Oh, so
plant.
It's Spore before Spore.
Oh, no, God, no, 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 no. This is more like, get a monster, add your own attachments, they fight. So, yeah, it's a really, here's the thing, you can't really change the shape of your monster. So it's not like Spore, it's just different body types, and then you just put things on them. Like, you could give the walking plant a laser weapon and sharp teeth.
I can dig it.
So anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with the industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us some iTunes comments. So, yeah. I'm actually going to be making a pizza from scratch for a rock star, a very famous one. I'm not going to say who.
Oh, pizza's good.
Yep. And then I'm finally going to watch JLA Avengers review by Linkara. Start giving people some shout-outs. What are you going to do this week that has nothing to do with video gaming? It has everything to do with Geek Society. Scott? By the way, before you answer, did you see the gameplay video I sent you of Civilization VI?
Oh, yeah. Well, see, you said no video games, so, but I did watch that, yes. And I was looking at the Dark Ages thing, how those get triggered. And it looks like you have to score error points. And if you don't get enough error points, you're going to get a Dark Age. So you might have to plan out what your strategy is on how you want to do your Golden Ages.
Or you may flub it deliberately, because if you have a right. Dark Age as a possibility, you can have a Heroic Age after it.
Yeah, and it looks like that might be better to do early on in the game, so that way you can catapult yourself forward. Because later on, the Dark Age is going to be a lot heavier a hit to you than the gold. You know, you got to plan it out. It looks like, and you have a more concrete way of planning it out, having these error points, and if you get enough or not enough, then you trigger whichever event you want. So that does look very interesting. And let's see what the emergencies. You have to get like a little quest, I guess you can call it, or a little requirement to fulfill, and you do it against this target, you get rewarded, and if you fail, you don't. So it's interesting, because, you know, if you're winning, they might all of a sudden converge on you and attack you, and that could be detriment.
If you decide to do a thing on someone else and no one joins you, it's like, oh, wait, they screwed me. I'm the only person who can actually do this. Oh, by the way, if you fail, the country that you accused or, you know, having a vendetta against says, haha, we get more bonuses.
I've been screwed that way in previous civs, where it's like, oh, we're going to go to war against this civ here, and I go to war with them, and I join in it, and then they make peace like 5 turns later, and I'm stuck in this war with this other civ, and I can't get out, and now they hate me, and I don't have a war buddy because they decided they were done.
You know, the opposite is true too, you know. Sometimes people ask me to go to war, and I said, sure, knowing that the other people were so far away that I could just do normally, oh yeah, you go have your war, I'll be here. And if they'll have like 1 or 2 ships come, then I say, oh yeah, boom, you're gone.
Yeah.
And then I demand one of their cities. How about you, TJ? By the way, TJ, we might as well talk about that Kickstarter project I showed you, for that board game, that co-op board game that you could actually play solo.
Oh, God, yeah. Let me, what was the name of it again?
I'm trying to remember myself. It had some great miniatures. Now, I know that... What?
It was a sci-fi horror game.
Yeah.
And it had a very distinctly similar qualities to the Thing and the Battlestar Galactica board games that we were talking about. It's called Nemesis.
Right. And the biggest difference between that and those other Nemesis and the other games was that at least this one you could actually play solo. You could play by yourself.
See, and I think that's cool as hell, but the best part of these games is teaming up with other people and, like,
so, by the way, the aesthetic is basically Alien in this one.
yeah, it's totally a sci-fi, like, on a spaceship. There's terrible monsters, and they start at little babies, and they turn into yeah, and they increase in size all the way up to adults, breeders,
to the queen,
and a queen, yeah.
So you have larva, creepers, adults, breeders, and a queen.
And then you've got five different hero classes, and you've got a map that you can, like, adjust the rooms in.
Yeah.
And so it's always going to be a different kind of game, which I love. I love it. I love the setup on this.
Yeah. And the best part is that it's not too expensive. It's $99. But you have to understand, you know, 70 quid, that's $99 in US money. But you have to understand that, you know, this is a game with a lot of miniatures and some really big ones too.
Yeah. I mean, there's like, well, let's see here. There's five main hero miniatures.
Soon to be six. Looks like there's, I mean, that's a stretch goal.
And then it looks like there's about 15 creature miniatures. Yeah. Then you've got
10 centimeters high.
Yeah. And then you've got an entire map. You've got an entire, like, looks like a good 2 feet by 4 foot map. Maybe a little less than that. Probably maybe more like 3 feet. Five hero trays, 19 room tokens, 138 cards.
280 cards, actually.
Yeah. So, yeah, there are a lot of pieces to this, and it looks pretty – it looks very nice. It looks like very good quality.
And the thing that appeals to me is that, again, you can play solo, because one of the hardest things about playing a game like Battlestar is that you have to find at least 3 players, and 3 players sucks. You need 5 players to make it any good.
Yeah, and this looks like the kind of thing that you're going to be able to. That it's going to be It looks like it can be fun by yourself, but it looks like it'll also be exponentially fun once you get into.
You can play
like
it one of two ways as well. In terms of other people, you can play full co-op where everybody's on the same side, and you can have one in which one player plays the intruder.
Yeah, and it's looking good.
So anyways, just do Kickstarter Nemesis. You'll find it right away. So, looking at a page right now, it was, they were looking for about $69,000. They've raised over $2 million.
Yeah.
And, you know, I understand why. Who wouldn't want to play this game? Well, I there are people who wouldn't want to play it. But, you know, like I said, The thing game looked okay, but this one looks really fantastic.
And I will say, like, yeah, these are both good games. I would totally check out the thing. If you like John Carpenter's 1982 movie, I would totally check out the thing, and I would totally check out this.
So anyways, what are you planning to do this week? Aside from, all right, you're going to bury yourself in Dragon Ball FighterZ, so I think it's...
Actually, I have plans this weekend. I have plans for work. I'm heading up to Austin to do a feature with the folks at Pinball's Arcade, which is a very, very huge... Like, I think they have over 100 machines there, just in terms of arcade machines. Or, I'm seeing... Sorry, pinball machines.
Right.
And then there's the actual arcade machines, which... It should be a really great time. I love arcades, and I love, like, old-school styled arcades, and I love pinball, so...
I gotta find my MAME. I gotta get my MAME downloaded again and get all those games. Just play Zookeeper again.
I would love to get a Star Trek or Star Wars pinball machine. That'd be awesome.
Oh, mm-hmm. I have on... what's it called? There are two main pinball simulators. One is Pinball FX, but the other one is Arcade Pinball. And I have the next generation pinball game that I actually played in real life too.
That is cool.
Yeah.
Let's see what this Galaxy class Starship.
I'm definitely gonna. One of my favorite pinball machines of all time, and the one that I'm probably gonna hunt down immediately is the Addams Family pinball machine.
I have that one too.
I love that machine.
The most popular. I think that was the most popular pinball machine in terms of sales ever released.
I would believe it. That thing is awesome.
And also, you know, it was very well made, too. I mean, the ramp's perfectly made, you know, and the what's it called? The interactivity was perfectly made. I will say I did enjoy the Pac-Man pinball game, in which if you did it a certain way, there's a little screen in which you started playing Pac-Man on it with a joystick. So you're playing pinball nice. And Pac-Man. Anyways, we will see you next weekend. Let us know what you're going to be playing this week. You can find me on
Twitter.
Have
fun gaming, everyone.
No, I haven't even done that yet, Scott.
Sorry.
You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
I'm at Johnny Chugs.
And I'm at Alpha Shard.
We will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Play games, have fun, and be cool, y'all.